Welcome to the Student Housing Insight Podcast, where we're bringing you in touch with the people that bring student housing to life. I'm joined with my co-host, Greta Dare. Greta, how are you doing today?
Hello. I am fantastic. Thank you for asking.
I do want to remind all of our listeners that this episode is sponsored by Student Housing. I'm almost at Student Housing Insight.
It's weird because that's what I heard in my brain.
Exactly.
Like, that's what you're about to say.
No, this episode is sponsored by Mike Spencer at studenthousingsites.com. Studenthousingsites.com is the platform that is crowdsourcing the process with locating student housing sites across the U.S. So, Greta, how's your week been?
Pretty exciting. How was yours while you were on vacay?
Yeah, it wasn't vacay. It was vacay for the podcast, but it was not vacay in no sense of the word. But no, got busy with some things, and which is always good. And you had to take over the helm here with the podcast. So I appreciate
Greta it. Greta takes over the podcast. Yeah, no problem. I mean, it's not my favorite podcast, so I expect a lighter form of judgment from all those listeners out there, but it definitely was interesting and fun. And I am really, really excited about not only the subject that we discussed, but also my guest, who is one of my favorite people and closest friends.
I think you're being too hard on yourself. I think it was a great podcast. And so you sent me the title for this podcast and called it Operational Marketing, which now that I've listened to the podcast, I completely get it, but I had to ask what that was. So for our audience listeners, won't you explain really quick with what you mean by operational marketing?
I did. I titled it Operational Marketing, and that comes from my very strong held belief that an excellent product and service can almost practically sell itself, and therefore copious amounts of marketing dollars, marketing agendas and plans are not as necessary. And I feel very strongly, I feel very passionately about it. And that's, you know, this is really just the beginning or a portion of that conversation and my thoughts on that.
Yeah, you make a really good analogy with Apple computers, and we'll talk about that for just a second, because that's always one of my Apple's always one of my favorite subjects.
That
right
is. You're an Apple guy.
Yeah. And so, but you know, they've, you know, there's always been great marketing behind Apple, at least since, you know, Steve Jobs went back. But you know, let's go back, you know, to I guess it was last fall, sometime last year, with the introduction of the new MacBook Pros, where they stripped so much out of it. You know, and for those of you that aren't in the know, there's not a USB port on the device at all. There are anywhere from 2 to 4 USB-C ports, which are like the small little things that you know plug your phone into, and that's it. So it really upset a lot of people, because when you're talking about a pro edition of a product, it's really to take a lot of hassle out of things that you're, you know, using that device from, you know, day after day, especially a lot of the creatives with you know, that are doing photography and video and those type of things. And none of those external devices that they have are using USB-C, or a lot of them, you know, don't have the wireless capabilities that would keep you from having to, you know, plug into a computer. So, you know, it's upset a lot of people. And, you know, what's been amazing with that is their marketing folks have had a really tough time overcoming that. And Apple, you know, is relying on, you know, Steve Jobs' quote from Wayne Gretzky of, look, I'm going to go to where the puck is going to be, not where it's at. And I completely get that. But when you're working in a world that's probably still another 2 to 3 years away, which is typically about how long a computer lasts, you know, not having those things, I shouldn't say that. Apple computers last much longer than 2 years, but not having, you know, not having that, or causing so much frustration with the users and with, you know, with the fanboys, yeah, now I'm still having to pay $1,900 for a computer, but now I've got to buy another $350, $400 worth of dongles and, you know, all this, all these converters and everything. You know, you didn't make things easier. You actually made it harder for me. And that's not part of Apple's brand. It's not, you know, so the, there's this dichotomy that's kind of happening with that. And I think that's really kind of what, you know, how you explain things, that, you know, the operation and the product need to be able to market themselves.
It is. And, you know, really what it comes down to is the biggest thing that we learn in marketing in general is that you start with your product and service. You start with your product generally. You have a new concept, you have an improved concept, whatever it is. And from there, you develop your service, you have your business plan, and then it's, okay, how do I get the word out? And a lot of companies have managed to get the word out and become incredibly successful. A lot of companies that we are very familiar with to this day, solely through referrals and word of mouth. And that's how they originally got started, was based off of that. And it was because they had a stellar product to begin with, and they had incredible service to follow it up with. Therefore, word of mouth in their non-existent marketing budget was the way that their business got its jumpstart. And that's actually how your business will continue. So you'll see with companies like Apple or Coca-Cola and, you know, all of these major companies, you have Ford, you have, you know, I'd say Toyota or Honda, but let's be honest, they probably don't really have ebbs and flows. But you see the ebbs and flows of these companies where marketing does this incredible job. They've got Britney Spears, they've got, you know, Wayne Gretzky's coat, they've got all of these really great ideas to really cause, you know, excitement around this product. But when people run out and they try clear Pepsi or, you know, Coke Zero or, you know, whatever the case may be, their new iPhone without a headphone jack, you know, they're not going to see the product movement or the sales that they were expecting from it. And it's because the public didn't agree. And so I think that what it really comes down to is, does the public agree with the value of your product? And if it doesn't, then you need to work on the product or product and service, which is what I consider to be operations and what operations is responsible for, and not look to marketing to further get the word out there or cause, you know, try to figure, you know, to get all of these great ways for people to learn about your product. Your product is known, but it appears that the public disagrees with you on its perceived value. And so for those that may listen to this and, you know, at this point they're potentially agreeing or they listen to the podcast and, you know, they want more information on this, I would definitely recommend the book Growth Hacking. It's like $9 or $16 for an audio download. I listened to it, you know, a long time ago back and forth, and it's an incredible book, and it really talks about everything that I'm saying here, but on, you know, across multiple industries. And you know, I think that it really encompasses the point here, and all I'm doing really is making it applicable to our industry.
So bringing it back to our industry, I think you picked a great person to interview on that subject. And tell us a little bit about the interview that you had.
So my guest was Eli Ruth, and if you haven't heard of him, then definitely look him up. He started out as a porter, and Wes, like you said, was the one who brought him into the industry. And I don't think that it happens that often where we see somebody start at a position like that and work their way all the way up to the corporate level. And Eli currently oversees half the portfolio at Trinitas Ventures, and that's both the operational side as well as development. And he's so smart and so incredibly talented that it's an incredible thing to see. And I'm really, really lucky that I know him, that I got to have him as a part of my professional career, and just a really great person all the way around.
Yeah, it's been great seeing him come up within the industry. Yeah, I hired him to pick up the trash at a property at UNC Charlotte. And he was always the type of, you know, we talk about this all the time. You know, you want to find folks that are not always, how's the best way of putting it? They're good people and everything, but they're always looking to make themselves better, and they're always looking to to help people out, and he is certainly the epitome of that, and I think it's taken him far. And yeah, you don't see a lot of folks in this industry that come from the maintenance side and work their way into the overall operations, and operations is actually what you guys spoke a lot about.
It is indeed. It's me, the marketing lady, talking about how important market or operations actually is to the successful lease up. And so, you know, it's something that we could have talked about a lot longer than we did. It's something that he and I have discussed at great length for as long as we've known each other. You and I have discussed it as well. And so hopefully it will have people, you know, not shaking their fists, but being like, yes, I say that same thing. And you know, hopefully it's somewhat enjoyable, and it is short. So, you know, here's to that, but yeah, hopefully it's good.
Well, yeah. And we'll hit play in just a second on the interview. But I want to just really encourage everybody to make sure you stay until the end, because he speaks on one of the things that, certainly he feels like it has made his journey in his career successful, and also speaks to the success that they're having at Trinitas. So, and that's on communication. So make sure you stay till the end on that. So
it's true. He makes an excellent point. It just like sneaks up on you.
Yeah. Any parting thoughts before we hit play?
No, not at all. Enjoy, and you know, be nice.
All right. Great. Enjoy this, guys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Student Housing Insights. This is your co-host, Greta Dare. I am excited to announce that I am sitting here with Eli Ruth, one of my very good friends, who is also in the student housing industry, someone whose operational opinion I respect and hold pretty highly. So hopefully after you guys all hear what he has to say and what we're going to talk about, you feel the same way. If not, that's all right. But hello, Eli. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Greta. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So just to get us kind of started here in a jumping off point so that people know who you are and why they should care about what you have to say, give me a rundown on what your experience has been thus far in the student housing industry.
Sure. I've been in the industry for about 14 years now. Started out in 2003 as a porter and groundskeeper with the Bradley Company in Charlotte, North Carolina, and stayed in that role for about 2 years, working my way through the maintenance technician position and into the maintenance supervisor position. At that point, the property had been sold to GMH, and I stayed with GMH for another 2 years before taking the position of area facilities manager for 13 properties in North Carolina and Virginia, as well as the maintenance supervisor position for 2 properties in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And then stayed in the maintenance side of the industry for another 3 years, a brief stint with Peak Campus, as well as a few years with Cardinal Group. And then in 2013, I accepted a position with Trinitas Ventures as the Assistant Director of Operations. And through a few title changes, mostly the responsibilities stayed the same, but now I am the Regional Director of Property Management with Trinitas Ventures.
What exactly does that position entail?
It's a little bit different with our company than it is with other companies. It's obviously the day-to-day operations, managing the site teams, managing budgets, things like that. But it's also, it has more involvement on the development and construction side. We start working with the development teams to do plan reviews, ensure that the property is going to operate in the way that property management would like for it to operate after we open the property. And then also during the construction process, overseeing the due diligence, the quality control, and I guess for lack of a better term, serving as the owner's rep during that construction process.
All right. That was actually why I asked, because I know that your position actually, one, it's a title, like, let's be honest, a lot of people use or have heard, but then two, it covers a lot more ground than I think a lot of people realize. So, all right. So with that being said, one of the main reasons why I wanted you to be on this podcast, as you know, is one, because of the fact that for the sake of the listeners, Eli and I have actually worked together in the past. And when we came together,
our positions basically relied on one another. I was handling leasing and Eli was more on the operational front, as he's pretty consistently been throughout his entire career. And we held the same standard opinion on what makes a property successful. So we have that background together. We have that agreement. We built a lot of tools around that concept. So before we get into that concept, I want to ask you, Eli, just for the sake of this episode, for the sake of the point that we're going to be making, what do you define as operations?
I think for most who aren't doing operations directly, it's thought of as processes, functionality, implementation, things like that. But with student housing, as well as many other specialized sectors, there's no singular definition that truly encompasses the breadth of what operations affects. You still have your standard operating procedure, and the decisions made on the operations side has tentacles that reach into many other departments, such as development, construction, accounting, marketing. I think from a macro level, your business model is kind of an outline of what you want to achieve, while operations is the path that you take to ensure you're meeting your goals. And the business model effectively creates a strategy, while your operating procedures develop tactics that complement that strategy.
All right, so I'm going to dumb that down. And essentially, would you agree that operations is essentially, if we were going to make it applicable to every industry that ever existed, that it encompasses the product? If you're going to define the product as the site as well as the service, do you feel like that kind of encompasses all of the different areas?
I would agree with that. I think it's also the approach as well.
Oh, valid. Absolutely. So that's kind of my jumping off point that I want to take us from, is that when you're looking at marketing from an any product perspective, so if we're talking about shoes, or if we're talking about an iPhone or a tablet or something along those lines, and we're talking about the product and we want to, you know, encompass that from operations. And so say we're talking about Apple, operations is going to be everything from your experience inside of the actual store, as well as all of the products that they offer itself, the physical products. So in student housing, that's going to, or housing in general, that's going to translate to the physical product, which is going to be the actual site, the rooms, the apartment, the amenities, et cetera, as well as the overall experience that somebody has when they live on site. So do you feel like those two kind of, that's essentially the same thing?
Yeah, I would say that's accurate.
Okay. Now, the reason why I'm making this point is because I think that there are some people that still hold the belief that, and this may be a huge shocking statement to some people, so be prepared. I actually very strongly hold the belief that an excellent operations or an excellent product and services can essentially supersede or trump a marketing entirely. And when I say that, what I mean is that I think that some people hold the idea or concept that marketing, a great marketing person, can come in and turn an entire property around, turn an asset around, bring it up to a new level just through excellent marketing plans and events. And I actually fully disagree with that. In the same way that if we were talking about Apple, they have some really incredible marketing strategies. However, if the product didn't live up to the hype, then Apple wouldn't have made it to the level that it's at. And that's kind of really, that's essentially the point that I want to make on this podcast. And, you know, I'm dragging you along on this journey with me to help make that point. So, and I think that, you know, I did that with you because of the fact that, like I said, Eli and I worked together a long time ago, and we had a portfolio of incredible assets. However, at that time, there wasn't an ops manual, there wasn't training, there wasn't specific set operational guidelines that were in place yet. And therefore, we both agreed that the portfolio was suffering because of it. And so we worked really hard to kind of get some of that stuff in place. So with that being said, Eli, what do you think are some of the key items that, you know, one, you've had a hand in implementing, and two, are necessary to ensure that a site is actually operationally strong?
I think to an extent they're all intertwined, but there are a few that stand out more than others. And to me, the first is staffing. And this includes hiring, training, and just overall satisfaction. You can have the best procedures of any operator in the nation. You can have the best marketing with of any operator in the nation, but without the right people in the right jobs, you can never truly be successful.
I completely agree. So why do you feel that that is?
Well, when we approach, say, when we build a new property, for instance, we have to hire from scratch. You do a lot of hiring. You inevitably will make some bad hires occasionally, but you start to learn what you're really looking for and what a good team member, somebody who can work and grow within your company, will bring. And what we found is that we try to hire people with the right attitude and habits. Knowledge and skills can always be taught, but attitude and habits are somewhat inherent. And it's critical for us to have our team members being happy in their roles. Positivity and negativity, in my opinion, are both contagious, and it extends to our residents and our prospects as well. But another area of that staffing is the training. And this is where it kind of comes into the marketing perspective, is that when you have people with the right attitude and habits, you still need a structured program to teach the required skills and knowledge. And you need somebody to be able to teach our marketing platform and how we want to approach this leasing season before we can really be effective. And then after we've been able to teach that, then we need to work together to make sure that we're actually implementing that on a daily basis.
Beautifully put. So essentially, I think, and I'm going to kind of expand on your statement in regards to staffing. And really the reason is that I've been to, you have as well, we both have been to properties all over the country. And, you know, I think that when you're walking into a property from the perspective of a really picky parent, that's actually a phrase that I used to use with our GMs, prepare for the pickiest parent. But if you're walking into a property from that perspective, it's, if you aren't meeting that expectation, so if your grounds aren't perfect, if your paint is peeling, if your welcome mat is dirty, there's fingerprints on the, you know, the glass, if your staff isn't answering the phone quickly enough, if your work orders aren't getting done, it's not only are you not making a positive first impression on the prospect as soon as they walk through the door, but additionally, you're not creating an excellent ongoing, you know, experience for the resident after they live there. And I think that the biggest thing is that people talk and that word gets around. And, you know, in the event that a property starts to suffer, it becomes a focus property, if it becomes a distressed asset, that's generally why, is that from an operational standpoint, that expectation has not been upheld. And I think, Eli, you're absolutely correct that staffing is going to make or break it. You know, even at properties, and I think we can both definitely speak to this, that even at properties where, you know, a company's a new startup and they don't have an ops manual out yet, or they don't have a stellar training program figured out, if you have the right person in place, they're still going to walk that property, make sure it looks great, and, you know, get those capital projects approved so that it looks its absolute best. So, I mean, I think that's pretty much what you're saying, correct?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, when you hand somebody the keys to a $50 million asset, to an extent, you expect that they're capable of being that operator that you hired them to be. And a lot of times they can mask deficiencies that you may have on your corporate side, while you work to better those ideas and better those processes, they can mask those deficiencies. But on the other side of that, if you have great processes and you hire somebody who's not a good operator, you hand them the keys to that $50 million asset and it can start to go downhill quickly.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the biggest things is that will impact it. And so, you know, I look at it as from product, and then I looked at it from the perspective of price. So we're talking about an asset that, you know, say it's been recently built within the last couple of years, and, you know, your on-site team, maybe, you know, they haven't received that many visits. They don't have that many inspections, whatever the case may be. They just have a lot going on and they've kind of let things slide a little bit. However, year after year, your property or your company is increasing rents and you're expecting an increase in revenue and occupancy, and you're not seeing that. And then in turn, you're expecting your marketing people to be able to get out there and bring people in through the door. I think this is where we have a tendency to go wrong, is that now your product doesn't match your price. Over the last couple of years, you've seen your product actually decline due to your existing on-site team not, you know, overseeing it the way that they quite should, or maybe you don't have the tools in place for them to be able to, you know what to do next. X, but your price is continuously increasing and those two things don't match up any longer. So in my opinion, it's that you have to be able to get to that product and improve it so that it actually matches the price that you're putting out to the public. I just want to pause and note, by the way, how many words that start with the letter P I've used in the last like 5 minutes, because there's been a lot. So, I mean, that's, I don't know, that's pretty much the way that I look at it, is that if your product isn't as good as it should be, if it isn't cared for as well as it should be, then, and your price doesn't match the perceived value of that product, and I've said this many times, then marketing is not going to be able to save you. And that's, you know, I can tell you, being sent all over the country, the first thing that I did when I walked through and reported back is give a no-nonsense reproach, you know, to whomever it was that I was speaking to, then, hey, I'd love to help. But the reality is right now is that your product isn't good enough for what you have it on the market for. And these people know it. And that's where you're suffering. So this product needs to be brought back up to expectation and turned around, essentially. And in the meantime, you're going to have to figure that out. And so, you know, it comes down to the fact that operations kind of drives the business.
Yeah, I think if you look at, to kind of put a metaphor for what you just described, is if you have a tripod, one leg being your product, one being marketing, one being operations, if your product is a little deficient, yeah, you're maybe that leg is a little shorter, your tripod will still stand, it's leaning a little bit, but it's correctable. Whereas if one is completely failing, whether it be our pricing structure, our leasing curves, or the marketing platform that we're using, or the operators on site, the tripod's not going to stand with only two legs. So you can help support one area from the other, but with one failing or not being correct, it's never going to support itself.
Agreed. So again, from your perspective, since you do actually have a lot of experience in the development world, how soon do you think that operations needs to become a focus, or how soon should a company be ensuring that operations is strong?
I think you need to be operationally strong and be able to provide proof of that or evidence of that before you ever seek approval with city council and local municipalities. We're working on a project currently where we're a little bit further away from campus and we're going to have a shuttle service. And one of the things that we have to show the university's transportation department is that we can shuttle our residents to and from their campus without interfering with their transportation or creating a clog in their system by adding new residents to their transportation system or dropping off where their buses currently drop off. And part of that is displaying what our current operating procedures are for our shuttle system. And a lot of university towns, since that is where student housing is built, obviously, are very concerned with knowing that the residents that are going to be at your property are going to be there to live and to still learn while they're at their university and not just party and create problems. So I think depending upon where you're trying to get your project approved, it's really important to be able to show that you're operationally sound before you ever even seek approval to build a project.
It's great. And I think that, you know, just to reiterate what operationally sound, what Eli means by that is obviously ensuring that you've got your staffing figured out, being really honest about what that property is going to need in order to be successful and to do that as early as possible.
Absolutely.
So I think that really, it's funny, I actually should have said this at the beginning of the podcast, that I'm going to guarantee that I keep this under 25 minutes. Definitely a dig at Wes. Love you, Wes. So I'm going to wrap this up now. And one thing that I'm going to say that I think that we both fully agree on again is it's, if you want your property to be successful, you have to be, you really have to have a, be prepared. You have to have a fully no bullshit, you know, kind of viewpoint on what it is that you're actually doing. You have to look at your properties. You can't make excuses about how good they look, about how well kept they are, about the on-site team. If you want that asset to succeed, then you need to make it a successful looking asset. And if not, then you need to put the things in place in order to do it before you can expect marketing to be able to come in and help out. Your product comes first, marketing comes second, and that's really the only way that you can be successful. And, with that, Eli, is there anything else that you want to add in regards to this discussion?
Sure. The only thing I would really add that I feel is equally as important is communication. Yeah. This is an obvious one, but often underperformed. And when I say communication, I mean interdepartmental continuity. You know, you want to prevent siloing within your own company. You want to break down barriers. It sounds somewhat idealistic, but it is a fundamental building block for success. And with that, I do mean communication from corporate to site teams to corporate, communication to your residents, your guarantors, prospects, vendors, communication to your lenders and equity partners, and communication to the city. And I think all of these are equally important. And I feel that while operations is very important to succeed, marketing is also very important, but we need to understand that no one person is better than the other, and communicating and working together is really what we need to be successful.
I absolutely agree. Couldn't have said it better. All right, man. Thank you so much for taking day out of your insane travel or taking time out of your insane travel day and spending a couple minutes with me.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right, everyone. Till next time. Bye.
Well, Greta, again, I think that was a great interview, and I think you're way too hard on yourself. But wow, Eli, again, I'll say it again. It's just, I hired Eli when he was in college, right? And it's just great seeing how he's, he's matured and kind of just really ran with student housing and is just so passionate about it now and passionate about the people he's serving, both, you know, residents and employees. I think that is great. So yeah, let's just, kind of talk about some of the takeaways. Certainly you guys hit on staffing like right off the bat, and that's huge when you're, this is a people business. We're serving people. I'd love to, love to be the person that comes up with the property management robot and that robot takes care of everything, but
providing excellent customer service and positive impacts on a daily basis.
So, but one thing that he said in there that I don't want to disagree with him about it, but something I just, want to take another step forward and remind our listeners about, he talks about looking, for employees, looking for habits and attitude over knowledge and skills, because the knowledge and skills can always be taught. And he said that the habits and attitude are inherent. And I think, I don't disagree with that, but I think more so, a lot of that comes from the way a person was raised, and not everyone has had, the best influences from their parents or family or however they were raised to really go into an environment and accept a culture where it is about the people, right? And if you're in this industry and you know that you're struggling with something like that, the most important thing I can really advise you, as well as advise the employers that are looking, is the most important thing to me when I'm looking for someone is self-awareness. And, they may not have all the great habits and attitude, but if they're at least aware that that's something that they struggle with, I can... I hate saying I can, but that's even something that I feel like can be moldable and, be able to make some huge hurdles and strides in doing that. So yes, look for folks with great habits and attitudes, but, along with that, and even independently from that, you really want to have someone that's self-aware.
True. And, it's interesting. I can kind of say with confidence that I don't think that Eli would disagree with that statement. I think that it's more so that, one, obviously he didn't have the time to list off all the things that he felt were incredibly important in operations, because obviously staffing is not the only key element. But additionally, I think that, to add to what you just said, is that that's definitely more so for someone like you, who absolutely looks for those types of people who have the ability, that self-awareness, to mature and grow into the person that you see them as and that you want to help guide them into becoming. And I think that for, you know, if it's an efficiency item where it's, we need to get this person in the door, get them trained and have them be a superstar in 3 months, then, you know, yeah, you need them to already have the right attitude and, you know, all of those things need to be innate in them. But if you see somebody that you feel has that potential to really grow into that human and you want to really, you enjoy having that human growth and being a part of that human growth like you, Wes, do. And I know that it's something that you feel very passionately about, then absolutely, then that's the route to take as well. Yeah. So I think both ways are absolutely valid. I think it really just depends on where your strengths lie as a person and where your passions lie as a person in the way that you want to lead and guide your people.
Yeah. And not to expand too much more on that, I'll hit on some of the other takeaways. Of course, you mentioned training and then the monitoring and adjusting of, you know, that how that training's being implemented and how that's carrying through with the operations.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, and I really look forward to putting those episodes out. I know that you and I have had this conversation, Eli and I had it. And again, if we would have more time, we would have gone into the tools that were put in place and we'd call them, you know, people's toolbox or their tools for success. And, you know, you can train people in the beginning, but if they also don't have all the tools necessary to be able to properly execute their job and you don't have checkpoints in place to ensure that that quality expectation or standard is being met, then you're really kind of wasting your time at the very beginning because you can tell them all the ways that you want something done, but if they don't actually have the tools needed to explain to them how to do it or how to execute it or how often property inspections should be completed and what they should be looking for. And, you know, I can go on and on about all of the things that are necessary for somebody to properly understand how to do their job incredibly well, you know, then if those things aren't there, then it's, you're lucky if you're going to find that person that Eli and I talked about that can do it on their own.
Property inspections. What are those? what good does that bring?
Right.
It's amazing how much of this,
multiple tangents about that.
It's amazing how much of this industry could, not just this industry. I think it's really any industry. If you're not, yeah, it all goes back to what everybody says about, you know, inspecting what your expectations are. And, it's amazing how, something as simple as a site inspection or property inspection or room inspection, it can help so much. With your operational needs. And
why is nobody leasing? That's weird. The landscaping's terrible and the model is filthy. That's weird. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then his last point on communication, I think it was just, I mean, there's not anything I can really do to add to it. I can't, the only thing we'll talk, it's funny. I had another conversation about this today with someone. We'll talk a little bit more in a couple of future episodes about not so much communication. I mean, everybody says, "Hey, you got to communicate," but there's a lot of how do you communicate? And
yeah.
I think
everybody likes to talk about it, but not everybody knows exactly what it means.
Yeah,
or how to actually follow through with it.
Yeah, and we'll be. I've got some things teed up for that, so I'll tease everybody with that. And you know, I think this is honestly a great way of introducing the second season because this is the first episode of the second season. And as we mentioned, everybody, this is going to be. We're kind of going away from the development side of things. And now we're going to be hitting
by development.
We're going to be hitting on the operations and in operations, I'm talking about everything from marketing and leasing.
Because that's operations.
Exactly. Go ahead. Exactly. So is accounting. You property accountants out there who think you're a separate department that only reports to the CFO.
Oh.
No, you're part of operations as well. And anyway, so now that I've probably got some unsubscribers to the podcast.
You know, it's only fair. Like I said on the last one, I'm sure I've pissed people off a couple of times and I'm always just like, it's all right.
Yeah, yeah. So no, I'm really looking forward to that. Like I said, I don't want this show just to be about the, you know, this is what you need to do and, you know, here are the things. You know, I really want to get into the how And you can expect a lot of that this next season and get into some specifics and talking about how and how we're going to be able to do that. We've also launched the Student Housing Insight YouTube channel.
I saw your mug online.
Yeah. So anyway, we are going to be using the YouTube channel because there were some things. And for those of you that haven't seen it, I just kind of give I got a lot of questions from folks on, you know, hey, you just got back from the NMHC conference. How was it? I need to go to something next year. You know, regardless if it was a property manager asking me the question or an investor, it was kind of like, hey, I don't want to go to all these conferences. You know, which one should I pay attention to? And really depending on, you know, what position the person was in and, you know,
what their goal is.
Yeah, what they need to get out of it. That was a different answer. And I really wanted to outline that for everybody. So that is the only video currently posted to our YouTube channel. But I really wanted to.
It almost
to use,
sounds like you're apologetic that you did a video for it, and so you have to explain it. It's okay, Wes.
Like I said,
not
it's nothing.
Looking.
It's nothing but my mug on there. So, anyway, so yeah, it's. I think you get if you're looking to, for those of you that are in budget season that kind of thing, and you're looking to figure out, you know, where you need to spend your time with conferences. I think that's a good resource, and we wanted to basically have something out there that when, you know, audio is great, it's, you know, it's passive, it's something you can do on a plane or when you're driving or working out or whatever. But there's some subject stuff that we're going to get into that requires your eyes. And wanted to have that. And it's just, you know, part of the overall platform that we want to create with Student Housing Insight. So yeah, thanks for subscribing to the podcast. And then also make sure that you're subscribing to the YouTube channel so that you get alerts there. But again, thanks to the audience and everybody that's been involved with season one. And I'm looking forward to the stuff coming out in season two. Greta, any words?
No, sir. I think I said more than enough for one day.
Awesome. Great, guys. I appreciate it. Take care, Greta.
Bye.